As the beautiful. Lag always confuses people.
Mm. True. But me and Prom are perfectly in sync.
And also we're Skype pros.
You guys have been friends on Skype for years, right?
Yeah.
Longer than since 2005.
Wasn't it something like just tonight you guys add each other on Skype?
Our adult
I don't appreciate
Skype.
This.
I've had the same Skype since 2005 because I don't care. But Prom is a professional.
Thank you for joining us. We've all reached the fifth episode of the seventh season. Eastwatch.
And with us today is my best friend in the entire world, an entertainment reporter for Mashable, Proma Khosla.
Proma.
Hello.
Proma is my OG internet friend from back in the early 2000s. We met in a chat room. We both love magic and dragons. And now Proma does a ton of work for Game of Thrones for Mashable. And here we are.
I actually temporarily changed my Twitter bio to Mashable Game of Thrones reporter instead of Mashable Entertainment reporter because that's at least 80% of what I've been writing.
I think it's a real job now.
No,
it is a real job.
It, not one person.
This is at one point the old stories were this is my old friend Proma, and then now since that was so long ago, I can kind of say the same thing too. So thank you so much for coming on Game of Thrones. This is, as we were saying before we started, this whole thing's coming a full circle.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, no, there's so many loud sounds over here. Did you hear that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
They're just going to keep happening. I need to find a quiet moment.
I could not be more excited to talk about this episode with you because literally like 2 seconds after the episode ended, you texted me saying that you didn't love it.
Yes.
And so
a nice way of saying it.
We are just coming off of episode 5, so we're just an hour after seeing this for the first time.
Before we go any further, Gilly truth bombs.
Gilly truth bombs. Gilly casually.
Gilly.
Okay, so many
Gilly.
O's coming in
Gilly.
Today.
Gilly.
Gilly. Gilly casually talking about Rhaegar or Rhaegar.
Annulment.
Everybody, annulment.
Who would have thought?
I'm sorry. I'm excited.
No, it's like the word annulment is everything that we could have ever. I mean, I know we've talked about R plus L equals J and we have had mostly confirmation, but to have her casually drop that and have Sam just kind of brush over that and be worried about the 10 million other things he's concerned with, I feel like that was one of those moments in this episode where we were all standing up and screaming.
You mean when Jon touched Drogon? Sorry.
We'll get there. But yeah, that's, yeah. Not, like, that's not something I never expected any sort of legal legitimacy to R plus L.
I know.
Yes, like maybe, you know, this happened. There is a Jon Snow. They were together in some capacity. They have a child, but like his annulment?
Yeah. So that means he's no bastard.
That means it's legitimate.
Less of a bastard.
Well, yeah.
He has a strong claim.
I mean, in the same episode where Jon Snow, excuse me, bastard no longer, where he stood in front of Drogon on that cliffside with the wind blowing and the sea salt spraying. She lands, he roars.
I know.
That was so in our faces of like Jon has a connection to these dragons. Jon is a dragon.
Oh yeah.
But also I loved it.
It was much better than him talking about, I can't remember exactly the quote, but from, was it the first episode or the second episode? It was the second episode. When he arrives at Dragonstone and the dragon swoops in right over his head as soon as he talks about his parentage or that yeah. He's a bastard or whatever it is. I can't remember.
When he's like, I'm no Stark. And the dragon's like, no shit.
Yeah, that was like hitting us over the head with the fact yeah. that Jon is a Targaryen. But this
I
moment with Drogon
those
was
when
really
no
cool.
dialogue, the show gets a lot better.
Well, yes. And so this, like, you can feel between... You see Jon's hand shaking for every good reason.
Also, Jon needs to wash his hands.
Yeah, his fingernails are a little dirty.
Yeah.
Well, Dany's up there watching this whole thing unfold. And that was a pretty unbelievable moment.
Literally the hottest thing she has ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. She was way too ever. Turned on.
I mean, he was standing in front of Drogon, which is worse than a dinosaur. And he's massive. And your back is to a huge cliff that you would fall and die down. And he gets in his face and he does
the
it.
The way to Khaleesi's heart is
Jon
through
Snow.
Her dragons.
So true.
And the way to Drogon's heart is to be a Targaryen.
Yeah.
His eyes dilated. He loved Jon or trusted him or something. And I felt very emotional.
Yeah. I was thinking of, I'm going to bring up Harry Potter, but when Harry meets Buckbeak and like, mm-hmm. he's very respectful and he earns his trust and he's scared. He's 13. And this is like a giant creature, but
they have that same mutual. Yeah. There's that mutual.
Because Harry Potter is part hippogriff.
Right.
He has the tattoo after all.
He does have the tattoo on his chest.
I heard about it.
Danny gets off Drogon and tells John how beautiful they are. And John's like, well, sort of, not really. And then Danny kind of gives him a look and he's like, yeah, I love dragons. Like, it's such a cool dragon. I love it so much.
I know that we love the scene and I know that we're going to be a little all over the place tonight because this was exciting and we're excited to have Proma here. And also it's Sunday night.
And a lot of things happened. Like, this was, Game of Thrones is usually like, and something I've said about it is that before in the past is that like, they do fewer scenes and they do longer scenes. Like, it wasn't abnormal on this show to have like a 15-20 minute scene in one place. But this episode was just like 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there.
Yeah.
Hey, Jorah's back. No, he's not. Someone's leaving. Someone's in a boat.
They were
getting
all over
the
place.
The Stark scrolls
just
being in different locations.
Setting. At least the Stark stayed in one place. I can't keep up with like Tyrion, Davos.
Tyrion,
just jet setting. Gendry?
King's Landing. Gendry!
Gendry!
Sorry. Gendry uses a hammer.
I screamed.
Gendry's been ready to go for seasons.
He's been waiting for someone to show up and address him. No one has spoken to him in 4 years.
Why would Gendry want to stay in King's Landing and create weapons for the family that murdered his father?
I love that Davos said, I thought you might still be rowing.
Yes.
Normally, a lot of the stuff this season that I've had a problem with is that on-the-nose, like, fanservice-y dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, but they've been giving it, in some cases, to the right people. Like, when Tyrion says that whole thing to Jon about, like, you're really good at brooding, I was like, oh my god, this is... We get it. He's good at brooding, but at least Peter Dinklage can pull this off. Same thing tonight. Like, at least Liam Cunningham can absolutely rock the thought you might still be rowing line.
It was perfect.
Sometimes they nail it. What do you think is the recipe?
I think the characters have to sort of build up the permission for it. Like, you would expect or accept rather a kind of sassy tongue-in-cheek line from someone like Davos or Tyrion. You can't really take that from, you know, from Cersei, from Daenerys, from some of the more dramatic people. Even, I wouldn't say, like, Arya, Sansa. There's very few characters that can carry those lines.
I totally agree. And Davos is one of them. And as soon as Davos started walking through Flea Bottom, and as soon as I saw the steel working, whatever the technical term, the hammer, I just started screaming, no, this is happening. And I knew, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation this season that this is going to happen. We've been kind of thinking about how and when and where and why. And the fact that Davos just rolls back up to where Gendry hiding under the nose of Cersei and the Lannisters just doing his thing. I totally agree, Promo, with what you're saying in the sense of like, when it's a character like Davos that's bringing this about, it works because he's less of a serious character than somebody like even the Stark kids. And so
he's also my number one living fave, so he can do anything on this show. Like, I don't even know, he could jump on one of the dragons, like ride it up north of the wall, swoop around and like wearing sunglasses, and I'd be like, this is really canon. Good.
I don't know if I'd be bothered by that. George R. R. Martin is a genius.
But this brings up this broader question of this entire season and kind of how I felt like some of the storylines have been carried really well and some of them haven't. And a lot of issues with what I had last episode, I think, came down to some of these different character interactions and how lines were delivered and how they interact with each other. And that came up again a little bit for me with Sansa and Arya in this episode. And I think there's a lot to unpack with what's happening with Littlefinger there and kind of their old dynamic falling back into place and Littlefinger playing into that, which I know we've been dogging on Littlefinger, but that's a very smart move on his part. And so I was happy to see him making some sort of move. But the Sansa Arya stuff, when the two of them are arguing like little sisters, but then Sansa's like, okay, I have work to do now.
Mm-hmm.
To me, those don't land in the same way as some of these other introductions and some of these other characters having conversations, like Jaime and Tyrion and Jon and Gendry and Thoros and Beric and the Hound.
Jeez.
And, you know, so.
Yeah, I was talking about this with someone this week with Sansa and Arya, which is, I wish we got more time with them in general. Like, I would love to spend just a whole episode with them if we could, because they had such a strained relationship when they were younger and when they last saw each other. And then B, because of how quickly and drastically and traumatically they were separated, they've lost this really formative period of time, I think. Like, a really critical period just, like, in general as a person growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But also a time at which you do forge these relationships that kind of solidify these relationships with your siblings, like their teens would have been when they sort of put their differences aside, I think, and started bonding more. And it just didn't, like, they missed that whole thing. And now they've met again and they're completely different people. And it's just, it's weird. Mm-hmm.
So I guess if they survive this struggle, then this will be what helps them create that bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once again, it's in under very, like, strange circumstances.
I think that Proma is making a good point in the sense that they miss these early development because they did have this strain. And I've been worried that, and I worried before the season began, that them coming back together would mean that they kind of fall into these same exact archetypes that they were in before when they were little kids, and that they wouldn't have grown at all. And I don't know if that's necessarily happening, because I think it's unrealistic for us to expect that they're going to greet each other in the same way Jon and Sansa greeted each other, because Jon and Sansa, while they weren't ever close and we didn't really see them interact at all, they didn't have the same type of strained relationship. I do think that Littlefinger is making a smart play on kind of tapping into the two of them, because this building that needs to happen and this reacquaintance and how different they are and all that kind of stuff is happening under very tumultuous circumstances. And I agree that all that needs to happen. I just don't know if it's being delivered in the way I would particularly like to see it. But I do think, again, that, like, if there's going to be a rift, that, you know, Littlefinger's been trying to plant this rift between Sansa and Jon, and that didn't really work very well. And so now they've got this more volatile situation that he can use to play in his favor if whatever he tries to accomplish plays out correctly.
I just hate him so much. I can't even respect his tactics because I just hate him so much.
You don't like him with his head, like, creeping around the corner in the darkness and his little smile?
Perfectly in the door.
Yeah, his smarmy little smile has never given me nightmares.
We've seen Littlefinger play this game. We've seen Littlefinger be Littlefinger over the course of the whole series. We've seen him commit murder. We've seen him fashion the deaths of many people. We've seen him throw conflicts into motion. But there was something about watching him spy on Arya and also knowing that he was actively manipulating Arya in her own home that was the darkest Littlefinger stuff for me. Mm-hmm. Thinking about what exactly he's up to here. And it makes me rethink and reposition a lot of my thoughts of the first part of the season for him.
Yeah, it's intrusive because we haven't seen him with Arya that much ever, other than when she was at King's Landing briefly, and he already, like, kind of had set his sights on Sansa.
And the last time we saw them together was at Harrenhal, and he didn't acknowledge that they saw each other. So, like, we haven't seen them together in forever.
I don't know that Arya would fall for this. I think that's what I'm struggling with. Like, I feel like she'd be too smart for Littlefinger. But then again, she hasn't been dealing with these types of machinations, as it were. Mm-hmm. She's been, like, training with assassins and stuff like that.
That's part of the dramatic struggle right now between the two sisters. When I watch it, I it's almost as bad as Bran being close to Jon at Craster's Keep and wanting to yell at the TV to say, just meet up already. You're so close. Oh. It's Arya and Sansa are together, and seeing them not understand each other, seeing Arya, it's almost like, is she, knowing what we know about her intelligence and what she's gone through, both of them really, when seeing her speak to Sansa and being bothered about the fact that, or thinking back to the fact that Sansa liked nice things because Sansa
nice
was
things.
Using her parents' bedroom with, it's hard to say because she's still young and she seems so strong and so resolute because of her skills and the way she's grown and adapted to violence, I guess. But at the same time, it's almost poetic because it would be the kind of closest to your heart sort of fallacy that would be the hardest to go over. And no matter how strong you are, knowing what I know about Arya, that might be something difficult for her to see past versus Sansa because their experiences were so different.
Exactly. And Sansa plays, they have this conversation and Arya is upset that she thinks that Sansa hasn't given Jon enough credit or hasn't defended him enough. And Sansa's trying to explain to her that she's playing a political game here and that she can't just chop everyone's head off. And they're coming at it from these very two perspectives. And we've talked at length about the fact that Sansa brings one set of skills to the table. Arya brings another set of skills to the table. So they're both going to approach these conversations from their backgrounds. And they're two very different things.
And I don't know that they've had the, like, sit down, catch up, you know, talk me through the past several years of your life conversation. Because it's been really rough
for
both
of
them.
So just give us that scene as a cold open next episode.
Yeah.
Just like a sisterly slumber party. They're, like, eating s'mores.
Drinking some tea.
We got the Archmaesters arguing about how they're going to handle business. We can get a little bit of Winterfell action, I think.
Yeah.
That scene with the Archmaesters was wrong in a good way.
That was a great, just way too topical, like a lot of old white men making decisions, denying facts.
Sam's like, listen, I loved it. If you guys simply, just you guys here in this room, just you, if you just listen to what I'm telling you that I saw, if you just believe me, this one thing, then everyone will believe you. What do you say? And they're like,
My favorite part about that is how they're so dismissive of Bran. And then they're also like, and they said a lot of things. I didn't catch all of them, but they also mention about the drowned god and how could they believe in something like that
too. I did not miss that.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to fight all of you, so.
But it's cool to have those callbacks in these types of scenes. And I like that. I think that going back to something that we talked a lot about last episode, and I don't mean to kind of harp on that, but I feel like I've been thinking a lot about why I liked this episode versus why I didn't love last episode. I felt like moments like this, there's a lot of callbacks and depth to what was going on that we didn't quite see, or I wasn't satisfied with enough last episode. And so as they're talking in the Citadel about Rhaegar casually and about Drowned God and Bran seeing stuff beyond the wall and this collective knowledge, I felt like you can feel their collective knowledge there as Sam is trying to get this point across that this Army of the Dead thing is real and what Bran is saying is legitimate and genuine.
Oh, there was no Bran this week.
There was like 2 seconds of Bran, but yeah, there wasn't
2 seconds
really.
Too many. But.
It was my second favorite Bran of the season, second to Chaos as a Ladder. He felt like he was in charge in the small moment we had him with his maester by his side. I was like, this is the Lord of Winterfell, kind of.
And then we found out very quickly that he was not.
That's true.
Before we get too far from it, I want to pour one out for Dickon.
Oh.
A true hero.
Well, we should probably talk about that. That was a sad but beautiful scene.
Mm-hmm. Not went out for Randall, though.
Yeah, no, Randall, you deserved it. So
bye.
Amazingly performed, though. Those two actors, how they made that hillside. I mean, just obviously the cinematography and the direction and the writing.
Oh my gosh,
and all of that can be said.
Up on
but
the
geez.
Hill up mm-hmm. there
Drogon
while
on the
Danny's
hill, like,
talking.
Took my breath away.
Yes, took my breath away. That's the two of them refusing Epic. To bend the knee. And my favorite part was Dickon's like, you're gonna have to kill me too, and Danny goes, who are you? That's like me and all of us before this season began.
Yeah. Well, and also, but yeah, so Daenerys getting going full like Targaryen lineage up in here, like she straight up said, I'm not here to murder, right after giving them the choice of bend the knee or die, or bend the mm-hmm. knee or be killed.
Yeah,
I
that's
know,
true.
In real time, mm-hmm. everyone's saying bend the knee. It's not a phrase we've heard before this season. Now it's like the new catchphrase.
Yeah.
It's not great. And then Tyrion clearly struggling. I really liked him in this scene because he's desperately trying to negotiate some mercy and like inject reason into the situation because that's who he is. He's like a logical, reasonable person. And when he sees the leader he's chosen to follow veering away from that, he panics. And I kind of get flashes of like, that must have been similarly mirrored to something that Jaime went through before with Daenerys' father.
Yeah, we get this, and then we get that conversation that he has with Varys, and Varys talking about the struggles he went through with a Mad King. So my question is, and I think a question we can come away from this episode continuing to ask, is whether or not Dany is making the right choices here, or if she should have done what she did with Tarly's, or if XYZ, you know, is she headed in this direction? Is she playing too much into her Mad Queen, Targaryen, Mad King, whatever tendencies? Or is she making the right call? And I don't know if we can particularly answer that for sure, but I'm just curious at what your guys' thoughts are on Dany as she stands right here at the mid-season 7.
One thing that's just, this is much smaller than you've asked like a really big picture question, but Jon doesn't know that these men were burned alive, to my knowledge, right after the battle. Sam still doesn't know about his father and brother. And as these two parties find out, I think that's going to mess with Jon's, I wouldn't say loyalty to Daenerys, but his sort of growing seed of trust. And Sam's going to probably be like, don't trust her. She's a murderer, even though my father sucked.
Yeah, especially if Sam arrives and they get the news around the same time. Bad timing.
There's too much. I think I'm overwhelmed. I feel a little overwhelmed and scattered because so much happened this episode, so many reunions, and it's now just big players meeting and talking, and like there's no separation anymore. Everyone's kind of playing on the same field, and it's stressful.
But doesn't it feel natural To me, it just kind of feels like a couple episodes ago, yeah, they made the shift that we're, you know, like Endgame. Here it comes. Jorah is healed. He looks great. He's standing here. This is John. I knew your dad.
I scream for Jorah, too. I care a lot about Jorah.
I do, too. There were so many moments like that tonight where the most was the interaction between John and Drogon, but the list goes on.
I think Jaime Tyrion may have been my favorite character interaction.
Yeah, okay, so, wow.
Well, the best part, right at the top of that scene is Bronn introducing them, and for a second I was like, here we are, the three bros are together.
I know.
just get in a boat and leave all of this behind.
I know.
I didn't take any notes on this conversation. I typically take very extensive notes, and I didn't take any notes on this conversation because I was just so transfixed onto what was happening. Number one, I was surprised that Jaime and Bronn didn't get captured and that they just swam away.
Me too.
But yeah, the two of them having this opportunity to connect and talk. Jaime and Tyrion kind of goes into sort of why he's made these decisions that he's made, and Jaime's so angry, and then they're talking about this plan that I really want to get into because I need your guys' opinion and to help me sort out what all is. The two of them together was just, I loved it. I loved it so much.
You do kind of go back in time, and I'm sure they felt that too of, you know, the when they last saw each other was, what, the end of season four? And things were just so different. They've both seen so much since then and grown, and like to have to kind of dial it back themselves and be like, no, here's why I did this thing several years ago is confusing mentally and internally. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like Jaime can't really defend Tywin, but he can't contain his anger towards Tyrion.
And he literally just found out about Olenna.
Yeah.
Ugh. Good timing.
He traces a lot. I think Jaime probably had a much more peaceful life at that time, and he just like has been in a spiral ever since.
Yeah,
I think what Joffrey's death was the first domino in many for Jaime. He had a lot of struggles before and was dealing with things, but from Joffrey onward, losing all of his children, watching Cersei progressively lose it, and then, you know, kill a bunch, thousands of people, maybe hundreds of people at the Sept, is he traces all of this chaos back, and losing his father too, he traces all this chaos back to probably to that wedding.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it overshadows the hand?
It's different. I think the hand was just kind of a personal thing.
Like two different sorts of struggles that he's going through.
Honestly, I think he definitely misses his hand, but that was also the start of his adventures with Brienne, which he is grateful for because they're in love.
Right.
And his quote unquote redemption arc that we're still kind of waiting on.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Well, we did get to look at the end of the kiss, though. I forgot about that. I was hopeful because I was crushed. I know we're jumping around. Sorry, it's Sunday, but Cersei was pointing at her belly, and then they kissed, and then
oh my god,
my crest fell.
Do we believe her?
I don't know if he does. Did you see the look after she gave it away? She was like,
"Don't betray
me." She had him, and she was hugging him, kissing him. Yeah, now never betray me again.
I really do believe in that prophecy that was given to Cersei, and I think that if she's telling the truth, she's not going to see, like, we're not going to see this child.
No.
She had her three children. That's the lot.
Yeah, no, if she's telling the truth, I don't know what to make of all of that at this point. But I do think that, and we've said this, that Jaime is not as speedily on this anti-Cersei train as I think a lot of us would like him to go. But hey,
he'll get there. Also, Euron has been just gone for like 2 weeks.
Raising the drowned god. I just, with that mysterious cut to the Hightower where it lingered with the flames billowing and that strange mention of the drowned god, I'm hopeful. I don't know if we're ever going to get into that, but
wait, Hannah, you wanted to talk about Tyrion's this grand plan. This hilarious plan they have of just like bringing White Walker south.
Oh yeah,
literally what?
Listening only one
to the characters talk about it, and then listening to the showrunners talk about this in the afterward in the like behind the episode thing was laughable.
I'm please like, break it down
they're
for
not
me.
Like keychains you pick up at a truck stop when you're driving around the country. They are literally murderous ice zombies.
Do you think that they're going to capture one of the big ones with the beards and one of those tiny bone guys that carry the little hatchets?
I don't know what there's just not feasible. And at no point in this does John say, like, that's crazy. This is a dumb idea. You can't do that. They are murderous ice zombies.
I think he's hyped to get back into action.
Yeah, John just wants to, like, he just wants to, like, put his IKEA rug back on, which he did. But I was brainstorming a list of, like, best ways to transport White Walkers south.
They had to build a really good cage, I think.
A really good cage is one. I think just like a sturdy suitcase, a cooler, a big cooler, maybe several coolers. Maybe you want to break it up.
Or take one of Danny's dragons, fly and pick one up with the teeth of the dragon and then fly to King's Landing.
Yeah.
So the plan is to go north of the wall, which we saw the shot of the squad heading north, to get one Dream White team. Walker and bring it back to King's Landing.
It's just so stupid. It's like those men who believe in mermaids, like going on an expedition at sea, throwing out nets.
I love it.
The other thing was that when that happened, that scene at the end of, you know, the squad north of the wall, is that that's what I thought the whole episode was going to be. I thought the whole episode was going to be the scenes that literally followed, that would have followed that. The credits started rolling and I was like, this is where I thought we were going to be.
Yeah, if we're talking Eastwatch. Yeah, I totally agree. But I just like, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around, okay, so they're going to get one White Walker and bring it to King's Landing to then mm-hmm. get everybody to push everything behind the efforts of stopping everything happening north of the wall. And then after that, they'll go back to the war. Right?
I mean, maybe it's about the friends you make along the way.
Maybe it is about the friends you make along the way. But right? Like, right, that's like kind that. Of what this idea is and what they're trying to accomplish. Like, so this is Danny and all of them saying, yes, let's put our efforts behind what's happening north of the wall.
This goes back to your question earlier when you asked Prom and I what we thought about Daenerys moving toward her position as the Mad Queen. I don't know if the fire and brimstone that Tyrion walked through, or the looks that they shared on the beach in the last episode, I don't know if it says that Dany is headed on that path. I don't know if she needs to be continually compared to something that her father did.
Mm-hmm.
I got a sense of things being different. I don't know if it was like this in the past for the Targaryens. I don't know if they had the kind of connection that Jon and Dany might have. I don't know if all the stakes were the same. You know, I don't know if they had a Cersei. I don't know if they had a Beric Dondarrion and the Hound and Gendry in a dream team with Robert's Warhammer.
Yeah,
just you know, heading north to the wall. I don't know if they had all of this. So I don't know if we can say that Daenerys might fall into the same trap as before. I don't know if her fierceness and her power are the wrong thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's they could very well possibly be the good thing. We don't know the answer. So what was your question now? Because I had a reason to connect it.
My question now is Dany then pausing her take of King's Landing to fight North?
I don't know that she's pausing it. I also don't believe that her motivation is pure. I'm not saying that sounds like she has ulterior motives. I just don't think that like she cares about the White Walker thing. She's just like, whatever. I can't believe I called it the White Walker thing. I don't think she cares about the impending threat that will kill everyone with certainty.
You just need some proof, Proma.
Yeah. She keeps hearing Jon talk about it, and she's like, okay, fine, do your thing. Also, I'm becoming attracted to you, and I hate it. But she's growing to trust Jon a little more, so it's more that. It's more her believing in Jon than it actually believing in the White Walkers. The evidence is mounting, but I still don't like.
That's a great point.
It's still the matter of him having seen and fought them, and that is just puts him on such a different plane of dealing with this than everyone else. And once they see and fight them, it's going to be the same thing. Everyone who sees and fights them kind of comes back with that same fervor, like Sam.
Do you feel that Tyrion can see Daenerys' mind working and see why she's agreeing to a decision like this? Do you think that he knows with that look at Dany after that look that she gave to Jon when they were saying bye? I have a feeling that we might be shaken up on another thread that might get tugged. I don't know if it be at the end of this season or somewhere in the next, where that relationship, which was so stressed by Varys in this episode, might get shaken by his, I don't know, questioning of her agreements and stuff based on her connection with Jon versus business.
Yeah, I think Tyrion is, for one of the first times since they've met, kind of doubting Daenerys. Not necessarily her leadership, but at least her means.
Wasn't this all his idea, though?
Sort of.
Yeah, it was, and it was a good idea. I know that it's a bit silly, but what if it could potentially end the conflict with Cersei, even if it's just for now, if they could just stop for a minute and go address the threat coming down from Eastwatch? When you think about everyone and the dragons, they seem so much more, you know, surmountable.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of read that look he gave her, though, more as, I still see the fear in there that he's like, okay, she's doing, you know, this makes sense now. She's making what seems like the right decision to me. She's acting rationally, but who knows?
But why?
who knows if she's going to just send Drogon north too.
I think the reality is setting in for Tyrion more and more every day. And last episode, they had this conversation about whether or not Tyrion was actually genuinely loyal to Dany or if he's still a Lannister. And I think that this is a way to resolve the conflict without having to murder his whole family, which I don't think that he wants to do. Even if he does believe in Dany's cause, I don't think that he wants to see Cersei and Jaime go down.
He does feel like a Varys, and I don't want to say a little finger, but his attitude toward Jaime when they were in the dragon room and his look toward Daenerys, I saw this. I know it was the same character, but it's sometimes easy to, I guess, think of everyone that's in Dany's camp as resolutely in Dany's camp because they're following Daenerys and she's Daenerys. But when Tyrion is in King's Landing, he's Tyrion. And I'll bet that, like Varys, he, even though we love him and when he swears a vow to Daenerys, like I said, I don't even think twice about it, but in his head, he's probably, you know, wanting the equal, he wants the equilibrium in Westeros to be fine for whoever. If it's Daenerys, it seems like it has to be Daenerys right now, but he's also talking to Jaime, and you know what I mean? Like, it's, I feel like he's keeping things in mind while he's counseling Daenerys, and
absolutely,
I don't know if she would like that knowledge.
But that's why he's good for her.
Yeah.
Because I think he brings the real Westerosi political perspective into somebody who, at the end of the day, really is a foreigner.
And Varys drinking that wine and seemed to be a little shook about, you know, sort of flashbacks to his time with Dany. What's going on there?
Both of them. I just loved them drinking wine in the throne room. Like, that's realistically, if we were all in Westeros, that's what I would be doing.
Yes.
I would be posting up in the throne room when no one's around, drinking wine and gossiping.
After hours in the stairwell.
That's what we do anyway.
Yeah. I know. That's what we do right now.
Right? Still at it.
I do want to say, I do think, before we get to more reunions, that this, what Varys tells Tyrion, and I know that, Zach, you made a good point about the fact that, like, we don't always have to be comparing Dany to anything else necessarily, but I do like that Varys has this perspective as Tyrion, whatever he's thinking right now and however he's feeling about what's going on, we can kind of argue, but I liked what Varys said about, this is what I told myself when I watched all these burning people beg for mercy. I'm not the one doing it. And he says over and over again, like, I'm not the one doing it. I'm not the one doing it. And that Tyrion's the right man with the right counsel. And so I like the fact that we've got Varys to bring that perspective of what things were like before into this whole mix.
I just don't know how to feel about it because I've always felt so secure in his guidance and his presence in the series. And also when he's with characters that I like, I feel like they're in good hands because Varys has a plan or he's been thinking about things at least. But he has shared those moments with Melisandre. Now he's drinking wine, which he doesn't like to be off his game. Now he's saying that Tyrion, he's always given Tyrion credit, but he's telling Tyrion, you're the guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm shook.
Like, I read this as a genuine moment from Varys.
He's had a few of those this season, which I really liked seeing. He's kind of just over, in the way that Littlefinger is still playing his games and manipulating people, Varys has sort of grown out of that and is like, I need to take care of myself and take care and like secure the future.
Because Melisandre told him he's gonna die.
I think the game's just changed so much that they've lost their way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has.
You know what I mean? He's just kind of looking around and what's he gonna do? Qyburn's
doing his thing. King's Landing.
Qyburn needs to just like retire.
The game has definitely changed.
Quick honorable mention to the detective sequence that they shot in Winterfell when Arya was following Littlefinger around.
It could have been very like Pink Panther type.
She's like moving in and out of behind walls.
Standing just enough to look at him. I have discovered a great new wine that is not only amazing, but it is Game of Thrones themed. This is a craft wine that is amazing and really captures the essence of the Game of Thrones series. We and members of the community were excited when we heard that Game of Thrones was launching their own series of official wines, and I'm very happy to report that from the labeling to the flavors available to the actual quality, they nailed it.
These three wines were made by Bob Cabral. He's a living legend, fourth generation grape grower, and has been making wines for over 30 years. He made a perfect 100-point Pinot Noir and over 100 wines that have been ranked 95 points or higher. Wine enthusiasts named him Winemaker of the Year. So when Game of Thrones wanted to make serious wines, they turned to the best.
These wines are not only Game of Thrones themed, but also amazing. The bottles are Game of Thrones themed, and there are three varieties, a Chardonnay, a Cabernet, and a red wine blend, all from fantastic vineyards in California. If you're looking for a personal favorite, I highly recommend the red blend. But all three are delicious and a perfect addition to a Game of Thrones viewing party.
And we have an exclusive offer for Game of Owns listeners. You can get a free Game of Thrones corkscrew with any wine purchase. This is a $10 value, absolutely free. This is a no-brainer to get amazing, high-quality wine from a world-renowned winemaker.
So, to get your own amazing Game of Thrones-themed wines, go to GameOfThronesWines.com and enter coupon code WINTER to receive a free Game of Thrones corkscrew, a $10 value, which is yours to keep long after you've enjoyed the wines.
That's GameOfThronesWines.com and enter coupon code WINTER.
Don't wait.
Winter is here, and you will need to have this wine to survive the coming storm.
Today's show is sponsored by Blue Apron.
Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country.
For less than $10 a meal, they deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door.
I just got back from a weekend in Providence with our guest Proma, and it is so nice to come home and have all of the fresh ingredients I need to make a delicious meal right there at my door.
Blue Apron is completely flexible, so you can customize your recipes each week and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. And Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right.
Some of the meals available in August include basil pesto chicken with summer vegetable panzanella, sauteed shrimp and green beans with globe tomatoes, spinach and orzo pasta, whole grain pasta and summer vegetables with heirloom tomato caprese salad, miso butter salmon and lo mein noodles with cucumber and charmed tomatoes, and meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charmed tomatoes.
Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/owns. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/owns. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
So that scroll, wait, we should talk about this scroll.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the real question of the hour is, who has screenshotted that scroll? and have we found it yet?
So I didn't find a screenshot, but what I did find, I mean, I'll just link you guys to this while we, 1 second. This is, so it's an old scroll that Sansa sent home to Rob when she was in King's Landing in like season one, informing him of Robert's death. And
is this what Cersei asked? So this is the note that Cersei asked her to send way back when.
The one that she definitely did not write on her own accord.
Right.
Oh, that Littlefinger definitely knows that she didn't write that on her own accord.
We have the full text. Should we just go ahead and read the whole thing? I think that by the time this episode airs, we'll have screenshots everywhere. But this is what she said. This is what she said as a refresher. It says, Rob, I write to you with a heavy heart. Our good King Robert is dead, killed from wounds he took in a boar hunt. Father has been charged with treason. He conspired with Robert's brothers against my beloved Joffrey and tried to steal his throne.
Gag.
The Lannisters are treating me very well and provide me with every comfort. I beg you, come to King's Landing, swear fealty to King Joffrey, and prevent any strife between the great houses of Lannister and Stark.
That's a well-written email.
It is a well-written email and good punctuation.
To the point. This is where, again, those missing years for Arya and Sansa come in, because that's the Sansa that Arya last knew. Mm-hmm. The one who would say something like this. Like, even though Sansa was really shocked by everything that happened and when her father was charged with treason, by then she and Arya were barely speaking. And Arya wouldn't have doubted back then or now that Sansa asked Rob to swear fealty to King Joffrey and that Sansa herself was loyal to Joffrey. And in public, that's what she was always saying, you know, like, I love my king and all of that.
There's no way that Arya believes Sansa wrote this, for sure.
You don't think so?
Or that she believed what she was writing.
You don't think that that's what they're setting up?
Even if she did, why would she be mad about it now?
I hope that by now, I mean, again, this is why they need to talk. Like, by now, if they've had a little, just a conversation, Arya would know all this horrible stuff about Joffrey. I mean, they talked about it. Right, yeah. When they first met, yeah, about Joffrey and hating Joffrey. Like, she must know that no matter whatever this says, this is someone, you know, this was the writing, even if it were true, of like a much more young, naive Sansa, mm-hmm, who within days would come to hate Joffrey with a burning passion.
I hope that this is another swing and miss for Littlefinger. Like I said earlier, I do think that if there's going to be a rift, that this is probably the right place for him to go. And so I do hope that this is another miss, but I have a small fear that Arya is going to see this and it just continues to fuel this whatever we've
resentment.
Seen. Yeah, whatever we've yeah. seen between them, you know, I'm
that's
concerned
a good point
about
this swing and the miss. Maybe, yeah, maybe Arya's found it and she, the next scene is she goes back down that hallway where Littlefinger's smiling his dumb smile and just like punches him in the face.
And she turns into Sansa, seduces him, then she kills him.
Oh.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
I'm stressed.
Can
I'm
you
Holy shit.
Imagine?
No.
They're definitely going to do that.
That is my new favorite. Just like Arya wearing Sansa's face, just like seducing. Like Littlefinger is ready to go.
It'll be like the Horcrux in book six. There's no way that they would have ever done that, Harry and Hermione, but since it's like a vision, those bodies can be doing it.
Mm-hmm. You could
potentially have Sansa giving him a look like she would never give him.
I was like, stop.
I know, it's disgusting to me, but also I don't think they'll, I mean, I hope they won't do that. I don't put anything past these writers now, but like they opened with Arya, you know, pulling a face and all of that. So I hope they don't resort to that again as like a gimmick in the season. They just need to, Arya and Sansa need to have a talk, have their slumber party, and then get a little tipsy and be like, yo, let's just kill this guy and then go kill him together, Littlefinger. That is my fanfic.
Mine is unfortunately the seduction one now. Unfortunately, that's where we're at.
All my fanfic is written from the perspective of Bran just at that tree in Winterfell.
That one tweet of Bran that's just like, you ever been this high? That's my favorite one. Also, that's so three-eyed Raven.
Oh, yeah, it is.
You ever been this high?
Bran is just too woke now. Every Bran meme.
Okay, so those crows, when he was working into the crows,
ugh,
I don't want to keep talking about Harry Potter, but the company, but also... That was the coolest bird sequence.
It was.
I know
very
that that's
cool.
kind of a lame point, but
what does that
everyone
have to do
that's
with
listening,
Harry Potter?
I just thought that they could have made the owls look that cool.
Okay,
interesting.
I realized that it was like 15 years ago, but
no. But I did really like that they sweep over Eastwatch, which I thought was really cool. We got this like overhead view of that, and then we get over into all of the whites coming over towards them, and I loved the Night King looking up and noticing, and that brings Bran out of it, because I'm just so interested in this connection that they have and what that means and what that's going to do and how that's going to play out. And so to see that instant moment there, I thought was really, really cool,
man.
So I mean, we've seen the preview for the next episode, and we've got again Jon the Hound, Beric Dondarrion, Gendry, Thoros,
squad.
I almost said Theon. That's not true. Tormund, Jorah, heading north, and I mean that's where they're headed to, right? And that the conversation that they have in wherever they were in the basement of Eastwatch, where the Hound and Thoros and Beric were hanging out, about how who says that we're here at the edge of the world at the same moment?
Oh, Beric stood up and had the amazing speech.
Yes.
That was shut down by Sandor a little
classic.
Early, but mm-hmm. but he was like, hey guys, look around. He was like, you think that
look around.
Gendry with his hammer or Jon with his hair are all here for no reason?
How lucky we are to be alive right now.
Look how handsome those two are. This is not a random event.
Thanks, Hannah.
I got your Hamilton reference from us.
Thank you. Also, when Zach started talking about like him with his hammer and him with his hair, I started thinking about the Avengers.
Yes.
Well, I mean.
Not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, did you see the final shot? The seven walking into hell.
Mm-hmm. And what a squad. I mean, we think about, and
honestly,
we got a little bit of this as they're down there in the cell, but these people who are here, the Brotherhood, Gendry recognizing who they are, remembering what they had done to
Gendry,
him.
Gendry, period. Like
Gendry.
Gendry showed back up, and in the course of like 20 minutes, he started from the bottom too, and then he was like,
now
I'm
he's
going
like this
north
key
to
player.
Fight the dead.
We've got Tormund, who's like talking to Jorah about how he's a Mormont, and it just all of these different things. The dynamic here is just I know we talk a lot about crazy that these people are on the screen at the same time having these conversations, but these people are just a bunch of misfits and they're all on the same side. They are. And who said, I can't remember who said everything, but they say they're on the same side because they're all breathing. Was that John? He's like, we're on the same side because we're all breathing.
Real.
What a crazy, I can't wrap my head around this yet.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking my notes pretty much are a wasteland of superlatives. And I know that we're not supposed to feel proud of that or cool or interesting, but I don't care. I'm talking to my friends on Sunday night after we just watched that episode. It was awesome. You know, they stood with each other and said, all right, let's walk into the north. And I thought to myself, you know, that whole army that they cut to, I believe that it might be unbelievable to think that they should walk toward them. But with those guys, they might be able to take on that whole army. They might be able to do it.
I'm still just very stressed about everything. Yes. I feel...
Me too.
It looks like episode 6 looks like it's going to be what I thought episode 5 would be. And honestly, what I thought this whole season would be from the beginning. The pacing of it has really thrown me off. Because when they said the pacing was going to be faster than what we'd seen in previous seasons, I thought that meant like things are just going to start happening. What it turns out they meant mostly was like everyone travels really fast. Like this episode when they're just like flitting back and forth from King's Landing. That's been an adjustment. I think I'm still kind of adjusting to that. And that's why this season is just sometimes messing with me.
You're right there. It's not less complicated. It's just more.
Yeah. And in some cases, sometimes it's still exciting to watch. But in some cases, I think the scenes they chose to show in those episodes didn't necessarily make sense. Like a lot of what happened in this episode could have been done quicker or in less scenes or with less like jumping around or even set up in previous episodes.
Which parts of it do you think should have been scattered around or moved or maybe didn't fit right?
There's just so much. I feel like maybe John and Drogon could have had their moment earlier. That's a small thing. It was just so much back and forth. I want to like break it down and count how many scenes there were compared with like a random episode from the past because it was so many, and so many shorter scenes, like 2-minute scenes and stuff, which we never do on this show.
Like, I felt like that was something that was more reminiscent of earlier seasons when everybody was completely in different spaces. But now that we're all kind of, the story's condensed, it feels different that we're skipping around that much because we're skipping around amongst the same people instead of us skipping around completely different sides of the continent. But I think that's interesting.
Gendry.
I know. Gendry. I want to talk. Another Gendry point that we haven't touched on is Gendry and Jon talking about their dads.
Yeah. Gendry and Jon standing in the cave talking about their dads. Gendry came back into the show better than ever. When the camera panned on him, the camera loved him. He was Gendry Baratheon, first of his name.
And he knew it
every bit of it.
And they're talking about the stories that they grew up on about their dads. And Gendry's like, our dads were friends. I want to follow you.
A Baratheon I like. My heart. Finally. I hope Gendry and Arya get to meet soon.
Oh, me too.
And Jon will be there.
Man.
And Sansa and Podrick.
And Brienne and Tormund.
The finale is just like a 8-way
Everyone's wedding. In the same room. Yeah. The finale is everyone's just standing in the same room and they're all talking over each other really fast. Oh, don't even. Wow. Okay. First of all, nobody talk about how. Okay, I'm not even going to go
the
into
most
Lost.
Important
I just
part
got
of your
flustered.
Life is the time you spend with these Stop. People, John. You needed all of them and they needed you.
I can't talk about Lost right now. I got very flustered.
No one does it alone, Jon Snow.
Oh my gosh, Proma. Okay.
Parallels are real.
But like for real, imagine just the last season is just going to be everybody trying not to get burned. Or and frozen. In the same room.
What if we're being a little too sheepish on how complicated next season could be and we see real love drama play out between Jaime, Brienne, and Tormund? It could happen.
Here's my thing. This is another thing. I'm also stressed because I'm like, we have two more episodes and I feel like so much still needs to happen. And that was part of why I was stressed for the previous 5 episodes because I was like, there's just so much to do. Like, we got to get moving.
It's been a stressful season.
It's just, I need a 10-episode season. I need next season to be a 10-episode season. And there's just too much to do. And
I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been waiting. As you talked about Proma, the whole, we thinking about going into Eastwatch, you're thinking, well, this is going to be a heavy-centric episode on stuff that's happening north of the Wall. And that didn't necessarily end up happening. After next episode, we're going to feel a little bit more like we've made some progress. You know, I feel like we've been building to this, and so like, I'm really excited about
like what last week did for me and for a lot of other people, except Hannah. I'm pumped for next week. I think I'm gonna rewatch Hard Home just to like get amped.
Mm-hmm. And watch the door, the last scene when they attack the tree as well.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh man, well,
so scary.
I rewatched Blackwater for our rewatch The Throne, which was cool
Blackwater.
Because we had a shout out to Blackwater in this episode when Davos and Tyrion roll to King's Landing and Tyrion says, the last time I was here, I killed my dad. And Davos says, last time I was here, you burned wildfire and killed my son. Like, oh, okay.
He is so cartoonishly chill.
Not a mess around.
Yeah. But he can pull it off, like Promo was saying earlier.
Yeah, you're something right.
That coming from Davos doesn't bother me.
And that was like a mic drop. He said it and I was like, oof. Like, yeah. I need some aloe vera for my burn.
Man. Yeah, I think I said oof.
Yeah, it was a real oof.
Also, quick shout out to his quick thinking that he planned ahead of time with the aphrodisiacs. Here's what he did. I'm going to give these guys money. Here's the plan just in case. I'll fill these guys' hands with money and then I'll tell them that I have some spoiled crab that will allow them to perform at the brothel the way that they believe that they should.
The way that Podrick Payne does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way that Pod does au naturel. And they're like, wait, hold on a second. I got this money. I got this crab. Perfect. Davos, you're a genius.
When Tyrion starts walking, Tyrion has this moment of what should I do? And he just keeps walking. I was yelling.
I've been there.
And we all, because it took a moment too, I was like, he's just walking. And I was like, wait, you can't do this here.
Then Gendry saves the day.
Gendry.
He can stay.
Who would have known that we'd get a casual exterior of King's Landing, Davos smuggling Tyrion and Gendry, and like just a casual shot of Tyrion just, I think he was walking with his hands in his pockets almost, just almost getting captured King's at King's Landing. Yeah.
After talking to Jaime.
Just met up with Jaime.
Yep.
I only thought they were going to meet on a fiery battlefield in season 8 for like a minute before they killed each other.
Me too.
And then now
or that he
this.
Was going to be captured or something. Mm-hmm. But no, we get Jaime in King's, or we get Jaime's in King's Landing. That's not surprising. We get Tyrion in King's Landing.
Well, sort of. After last episode, it's kind of surprising.
That is surprising. Yeah. I mean, real talk.
Real talk.
What?
But I like it though. I love it.
It's fine.
I don't know. I get it.
It's fine. But it was very surprising to me. But man, I mean, are we at the point that we can give our owns our favorite moment?
Yeah. I know that we could keep talking about this for hours. Probably should.
Yeah. Let's do it.
This episode was called Eastwatch. I'm not sure why it was so heavily titled Eastwatch, other than Eastwatch being one of the coolest episode names, in my opinion. Also, we got that awesome location shot of Eastwatch. In the opening credits. And it was a lot cooler than most locations have ever looked. So hell yeah, for some northern Westeros love and for the scale of the architecture there in such a remote location, I thought it added a lot of scale. After the fact, there's so many things I want to say. We'll save it for the Thursday episode. I'm going to give my own to Bronn for somehow convincing Jaime that he needed to go into a room full of dragon skulls to train with his sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Like to get him that mm-hmm. far down after that fight and after traveling back to King's Landing. And also for connecting he and Tyrion much earlier than we thought and much easier than I think we all expected.
Mm-hmm. His two bros.
I know. Bronn, and Bronn with his early advice in the episode as well. He laid it out real for Jaime. The fuck were you thinking back then?
Yes. That's how we all were thinking.
He also was like, I'm out. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. There are massive dragons involved.
Also owned to Jon Snow and Drogon.
That's period. What I thought you were going to for sure say.
I felt emotional after the pet night that I had, you know? Mm-hmm. It was good. Mm-hmm. So owned to that.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah, Promi, you want to go next?
My own for this episode, and honestly, every episode ever, is Davos Seaworth. My fave. I love
Perfect.
Him so much.
Perfect.
The voice of reason, the star of the show.
That's great.
Blessed.
Fantastic.
Perfect.
He really is the star in our hearts.
Everything he does is gold. I hope he lives forever.
He's lived this long.
Yeah.
He's like, don't listen to me. I'm just an old fuck that's made it this far, or whatever he says anyway.
Exactly what he said. He was like, nobody pay me any mind. I've done nothing except live to a ripe old age.
Yeah. I'm going to give my own to Annulment.
Good one.
And Rhaegar, whatever, however Gilly pronounces it. I can't help but give my own to that. In everything that happened in this episode. So own to Gilly, own to Annulment, and own to or Pacell equals J.
Pacell equals J.
If you want to send in your owns, and if you want to participate with us, you can do so in Gendry. A number of different ways. If you want to send us your pictures of Gendry rowing, which we've already tweeted out, but there's more opportunities. Mm. If you have, you know, whatever it is, make sure you use the hashtag 2K17 for us to guarantee to read it. But you can reach us in a number of different ways. You can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns or on Facebook, Game of Owns. Or if you have lots of thoughts and feelings, you can send that in an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Honestly, we welcome all iterations of your Gendry-related fan art, hammer or not. The choice is
hammer preferred.
I think we're asking for a lot of Gendry and Thor mashups at this point because of the hammer thing.
Yeah, we are. So
bring it.
Promo's my target audience.
Promo, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know it's late and it's Sunday and you were writing for Game of Thrones tonight, and thank you for making the time and talking to us.
No, it was a delight. This is so fun.
It's been a dream to have you on our show with us. So
I'm just
thank
so happy
you.
To be Skyping with you again, Hannah. 11 years later.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Promo's been doing a ton of work for Mashable with Game of Thrones this season. Promo, do you want to tell everybody how they can find you?
Yes, I would love to. So if you go to mashable.com/entertainment, you can find not only my Game of Thrones content, but all of my amazing, hilarious, super nerdy, intense Game of Thrones fan coworkers posts. We have everything from an explainer of the Golden Company to who is Dickon and why does he matter, RIP. That's all of that is there. On our Facebook page also, every Monday, I host a morning show called Good Day Westeros.
Oh,
with
yes.
Two of my colleagues. We drink coffee and wear capes and talk about the previous episode. And it's silly, but it's really fun. And hopefully people enjoy that. And if you want to just heckle me personally on Twitter, I am at @promoitup. Don't actually heckle me. Just send me Gendry GIFs. And Davos. Davos
especially
memes.
Davos.
You should also check out Proma's in-depth interview one-on-one with Ramin Djawadi from last year. That was a pretty awesome deep dive. I love the insight you pulled up.
Thank you. That is on Vanity Fair.
I remember reading that we were going to talk to him last year. It was helpful that someone close had spoken.
Paved the way.
You know, and we already had something to build off of.
Well, I got to meet him in person at the concert this year, and his publicists were like so grateful and so happy to see me. They were like, any concert you want to come to in any city, like, because I guess I was the first person last year who interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just started like a wave.
Yeah.
We copied you.
It was really cool.
Definitely. If that's okay.
No, absolutely. I want him to get all the love in the world. He's the real MVP.
He really is. Also, quick mention at the end of the show to the score of this episode. What was going on
absolutely.
When Dany was on the hill? Ugh. Talk about season one Khaleesi mm-hmm. coming back.
Ugh. Jeez.
Okay, rewatch the throne. This is Blackwater week. It's a big deal. Big battles are happening in season 7, but we're also throwing down some big battles on Stitcher Premium. You can listen to Rewatch the Throne at rewatchthethrone.com, and we welcome you to join us.
I've been super excited in rewatch to finally get to Blackwater because I think this may be one of my most watched episodes of the whole series. So,
and we didn't get to record on this podcast Blackwater at all, so it's really you and I's first conversation
about it. Yeah, I'm super excited.
It is, by popular demand, the month of August. And we would love to invite you to rate and review our podcast on iTunes if you like Game of Thrones. 5 stars will do. Thank you very much.
And lastly, if you want to support us on Patreon, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/goo. We've got tons of old content back there, particularly our Squad of Ice and Fire podcast, which is just...
Promo might be on one of those.
I think Promo is on a couple... If Promo's not on A Squad of Ice and Fire, 90% of the stories I tell on A Squad of Ice and Fire involve Promo in some way.
We'll put some of our outtakes in.
I've been on that, but...
You may have been on that without knowing.
What?
Whoops.
Anyway, you can go over to patreon.com/goo and check that out.
Do you just record our conversations all the time?
No.
We were recording tonight, by the way, also, Promo.
What?
So thanks again.
You recorded this?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's fitting. Such an important episode with such a close friend. But also guest mid-season. The family is it's a large family, but it's a close family.
It's been really fun, as we've said, this whole season, having so many different perspectives and people on with us to talk about what they're doing within fandom and bring that to our show and bring that to just how we watch the season has been really, really fun. So thanks so much, Proma. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's been the best.
I could talk nerdy with you guys all day.